CJ Radio International presents the longest-running international show, The Happy Station Show, produced and presented by Keith Perron.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you may be. Welcome again to another edition of your Sunday program from PCJ Radio International. Well, on today's program, we, of course, have music as usual, and also to respond, by name, that is, to those who heard the third program in the series from the Radio Nederland archives. We want to acknowledge those and give you information on the QSL, which will be sent out this week. But first, Little Frankie Ifield and Waltzing Matilda.
Hey, what's a dollar swagman camp by a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree? He sang as he watched and he waited till his billy boiled. Here come a waltzing Matilda with me. Sing!
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. Come a waltzing Matilda with me.
And he laughed and he sang as he waited till his billy boiled. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Well, down came a chumbuck to drink from the billabong. Up jumped the swagman and he gobbled him with glee. He stuck the jolly chumbuck into his old sucker bag. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Once more now.
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You come a waltzing Matilda with me.
And he sang as he watched and he waited till his billy boiled. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Well, down came the squatter mounted on his thoroughbred. Up rode the troopers, 1, 2, 3. Where's that jolly jumbuck that you've got in your tucker bag? You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Sing!
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You come a waltzing Matilda with me.
And he sang as he watched and he waited till his billy boiled. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Hey! Well, up jumped the swagman and he sprang into the billabong. You'll never take me alive, said he. This song can't be heard when you pass by the billabong. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Everybody now.
Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda. You come a waltzing Matilda with me.
And he laughed and he sang as you sat by the billabong. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. You come a waltzing Matilda with me.
You come a waltzing Matilda.
Frank Ifield with a very different arrangement of Waltzing Matilda. You can say it's kind of the unofficial national anthem of Australia. If people think of the national anthem of Australia, very often they think of Waltzing Matilda, but it actually isn't. I remember a number of years ago, well, actually not even longer than that, there was a bit of a discussion whether or not to even make it the national anthem. It didn't, of course, because it's not, well, it's just, it's like making, let's see, something like Land of Hope and Glory, the UK national anthem. But anyway, it didn't happen. Anyway, you may remember just a few weeks ago, actually 2 weeks ago, we broadcast installment number 3, program 3, from the Radio Nederland Archives, where we looked at the drama department. And we would like to acknowledge the following people. Richard Lemke in Alberta, Canada. Shin Are, who lives in Yokohama, Japan, who heard the program. I'm actually very surprised that you were able to even pick it up in your part of the world, because the frequency that you were tuning into, which is 7780 kilohertz, was targeted towards Europe. But then I, as I was reading through the email, I found that you were listening to the web SDR receiver that's at Twente University in the Netherlands. It's actually an interesting receiver because you can go there and put frequencies that are targeted towards Europe and pick them up. So thank you very much for that one. Also, too, Avoro Lopez Osunul in Granada, Spain. And he was tuning, actually, to a transmission that is completely outside of your area. He was listening to our service targeting the Caribbean and Latin America on 9955 kilohertz. Lorenzo Fidel in Luxembourg reported that he had no problem picking up the program that was broadcast on September the 18th on 7780 kilohertz to Europe, and he heard the first hour of the program until he said he had to go off and do something else. Also, a special hello to Horst Merlicht, who lives in Lipotfa, Hungary. And I have to admit, your email was slightly confusing at first. And you mentioned here that your English isn't very good, but it took a while to actually figure out that actually you were listening to what you said you were listening to. So yes, we're going to reply to you as well, so don't worry about that one. Next to Thomas Drescher, who lives in Postmünster, Germany, a name, of course, that we've heard many times before because he's actually been listening to all the programs that we have been putting out. To Dave Freeborough in the United Kingdom. Hello, Dave, and thank you very much for your letter. And he said, Paula McQuarrie does a fantastic job. And just to let you know, McQuarrie is not spelled M-A-C-A-U-L-E-R-E-L-Y. It is actually spelled M-A-C-Q-U-R-I-E. Vladimir, our good friend Vladimir Rozkov in Kansk, Russia. And I'm kind of wondering, actually, on this one, if you got mixed up maybe with some of the transmissions, because the information that you included in your email actually has information from two separate broadcasts, but they're combined in one, but you only mentioned one frequency and one time. So we'll actually write you back on that one and try to get a little bit of clarification. Another one here from Russia, Anatolo Klubov, who lives in Moscow. And he's the chairman of the Russian DX League. And they have a website that I've actually had the pleasure of visiting, which is rusdx.narod.ru, which is rather interesting. And finally here, actually, from somebody who has written a number of times before, Andreas Bohm, who lives in Coswig, Germany. And he was listening on 7780 kilohertz. Anyway, we do have the next installment of from the Radio Netherlands archives coming up in a few weeks' time. But first, some music, and then I'll tell you about that program in a minute. But first, Al Keola and the United Artist Orchestra. He recorded a whole series of well-known Western themes from film and television. And Al Keola, of course, was one of the, well, most sought-after session musicians in Los Angeles, who also recorded under the United Artists record label. This is the theme song to the series Scalp Hunters. Guitar with the United Artists Orchestra and the Scalp Hunters. He recorded a number of albums under the United Artists record label that all kind of have that same theme. They're fantastic, absolutely fantastic. There is a CD that came out a few years ago on the, what label was it? A collectibles label, which is a compilation actually of some of the best recordings that he made for UA. But I would suggest, if possible, to try to find the actual albums themselves, because each album has a concept and theme behind them. Anyway, you are listening to Happy Station, coming to you from PCJ Radio International. And in a few weeks' time, we're going to be broadcasting program 4 of our continuing series from the Radio Nederland archives. And in this program, program 4, the focus is going to be on Eddie Starts. We're going to be broadcasting, of course, some rare Eddie Starts material and broadcasting an original Happy Station show, the full 80-minute program, because in those days the program was 80 minutes, so we actually have that coming up. I will tell you about the dates next week, as we are still working them out at the moment. So, yes, that's exactly what we have coming up. Anyway, time for more music again. Paul McCartney and Wings from the Sigtune to the movie Live and Let Die.
When you were young and your heart was an open book, you used to say, live and let live.
You know you did.
But if this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in and cry, say live and let die.
Live and let die.
Live and let die.
Live and let die.
this ever-changing world in which we live in makes you give in a cry. Say, live and let die.
Paul McCartney and Wings, a song that he also co-wrote with George Martin. When the two of them worked on the original soundtrack and the film score to the movie Live and Let Die. All right. Hildegard Knief is a singer that we have featured on the program before. We now take a look back at a retrospective that was done in 1972, produced and presented by Neville Gray, on Hildegard Knief.
Hildegard Frieda Albertine hatte ihr wenig Freude gemacht. Ihr, der Mutter Frieda Auguste. Da waren ewig neue, endlose, zahllose, familienzermürbende Krankheiten, Tropfen und Tablettenströme. Hilde ist dauernd krank, hieß es. Da war meine Angst, wenn sie weg war. Da war meine Angst, wenn sie da war, Angst, sie könnte wieder weggehen. Da war das Rumgestehe an Korridortüren, Angst vor Dunkelheit, Angst vor Alleinheit, vor Vergessen.
Der geschenkte Gaul, The Gift Horse, a report on a life of actress Hildegard Knief. Growing up in Nazi Germany, her American and movie years, and a return to Europe. Actress, movie star, singer, and now successful author, I asked Miss Knief why she's written the book, why this title, and why it's appeared just now.
I didn't want to write so much about myself. Of course, it's an autobiography, but I intended to use myself much more as a camera than somebody who is emotionally involved and talks about his own reactions. Mm-hmm. I just report, and I also call the book, aside from the title, The Gift Horse, Report on a Life. I wrote it at this specific time I started to write. I don't really know why I started at this specific time, except that I thought it was the right moment for me, and also to report on a generation that was raised in Nazi Germany, mm-hmm. with children hardly going to school when Hitler appeared, but nearly grown up when the war ended. And how is it for a generation to be held responsible for the crimes that the country committed, my country committed, mm-hmm. at the same time knowing they're not really responsible, because when they're 6 years old, they can't do anything against the dictatorship, of course. And how do you live with that form of collective guilt, which I, for my person, have accepted totally? And I thought it was a time now to write about it.
And the book chronicles most incredible experiences during the war, those rather awful Hollywood experiences, and also the mixed reaction you received in Germany on your return there. Just how did you manage to keep your sanity through all of those sort of things?
Well, maybe I haven't. I forgot about the title. You asked me about the title. The Gift Horse, I mean, you have the same saying in English, mm-hmm. that you don't look in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Now, there's also, which triggered it off for me to use that title, was that while I was writing the book, remembered a short story by J.D. Salinger called Teddy, with this boy, this 12-year-old boy, who's a so-called wonder child and extremely intelligent for his age, and being checked and heard by every professor in the world. And this boy foresees his own death. He's 12 years old, and he knows that he will probably die the next day. And he says, I don't know what all the fuss is made about life and death. In my opinion, life is nothing but a gift horse. When it came back to me while I was writing, I thought it was the appropriate title.
I travel alone. Sometimes I'm east, sometimes I'm west. No chains can ever bind me. No remembered love can ever find me. I travel alone, fair though the places and faces I've known. When the dream has ended and passion has flown, I travel alone, free from love's illusion. My heart is my own. I travel alone. Free from love's illusion. My heart is my own. I travel alone.
When you returned to Germany after the war, why so much work? Sometimes you were doing sort of two and more films at once. In fact, Carol Reed said that if they were good films, even had they been good films, it would still be too much. Were you trying to make up for lost time or something?
Yes, I suppose so. I was so overwhelmed by the fact that I was now allowed to work after 3 years of total isolation and not being allowed to work whatsoever in Hollywood. I was so overwhelmed by the fact that now I could, that I overdid it, of course. Mm-hmm. And it was a kind of frantic thing about it, and was not triggered off by any almost artistic beliefs in any script. If a director like Carol Reed or Duvivier asked me to do a film, I practically jumped and took it and did much too much at that time. And which was very, very stupid, I must say, but it couldn't be helped. It was a reaction, probably quite a normal reaction for an actor who had been sitting around from 21 until 24, 3 years at this time of your life without work at all.
Mm-hmm. It must have been a rather strange experience as a German in the United States when you first went over there, being referred to sometimes as a term of endearment, but not always, being referred to as Kraut or the Kraut or our Kraut, and seeing some of those rather awful American and British films that rather distorted that every stage German was wie Herr Weiss of making you talk sort of thing. That must have been a rather strange experience to live under those conditions.
It was very frightening because, on one hand, professionally, it was for me that first I wasn't, you know, that Selznick, who had brought me over to America, didn't dare to make a film with me because he suddenly realized it was too short after the end of the war to use a German in a major American production. So there I sat and didn't work. And it was a time where really Nazi was synonymous with German and vice versa. Mm. And then the McCarthy era started, and that was a very peculiar situation because I felt myself almost like a ping-pong ball in political commotions and activities and insanities. Mm-hmm. Because when McCarthy came and the McCarthy committee and this kind of witch hunt started, mm-hmm. I was suddenly not this Nazi German, but I was suddenly that nice democratic German who had suffered so much on the hands of the Russians, and suddenly I was allowed to work. And I mean, while friends of mine like John Garfield were driven literally to suicide because they were not allowed to work anymore, because they had no money, because they had no friends anymore, because they refused to say anything in front of this un-American committee, I suddenly found myself with work. And that was quite insane. But aside from my own personal ping-pong ball situation, it to this day, it irritates me, to put it mildly, what those films have really done in the end. Mm. Those films that dealt with the Second World War, that dealt with Nazi Germany, because it In fact, it belittled the horror of a dictatorship, of any dictatorship. Yeah. It made it kind of funny. It made it kind of, you know, the jerks that always screamed, "Heil Hitler," but that behind it were those evil, demonic minds. Mm. It left it completely out. It never showed that. It was that kind of hunky-dory Western where one comes from the left and the others come from the right and they meet in the middle, and the good people, the Americans, are always winning. And it showed the war and the dictatorship in its most idiotic way. And in the end, it even came to that. I think that through those films and through magazine articles and all that, it has come to the point where in the Western world, Hitler has almost become a standard whereby whatever happens in the world, somebody will say Hitler was worse.
Yes.
He became that kind of easy standard, and I think that's unforgivable, to put something that was as horrible and unbelievable as this Nazi regime, to put it up almost like a standard.
Today, Hildegard Knef no longer acts, but writes poems and songs which she sings in concert and on record. Most are of an extremely personal nature, and this is one of the most poignant of them.
Mein Freund, in der Zeitung stand's auf Seite 3. Mein Freund, mein Freund, du bist gestorben. Ich wollte dich sehen, wollte dich sprechen oder aufschreiben, schon gestern. Spätestens morgen. Gebraucht, brauchst du mich jetzt? Was habe ich versäumt? Was versäum ich jetzt? Wirst du beweint? Von wem, wenn nicht von mir? Es gab keine Tränen. Keine Tränen zwischen dir und mir. Nein, es gab keine Tränen, mein Freund, bis jetzt. Nein, auch nicht jetzt.
Can you explain this strange love-hate relationship you've had with the German people during, before and after the war? On your return, for example, this incredible press vilification. You mentioned it in an interview with Catherine Stott of The Guardian last year.
Yes. Well, it is a very, very strange thing, and I suppose it happens to many people in show business anyway. There are times where they're accepted and times where they're shot at. Mm. And the stupid thing about it basically is, as long as you're in the film industry, you're being held responsible for something you're not really responsible for, and that is a film. The end product is a work of the author and the director, not the actor. But this is beside the point. You have to take in consideration that the German press suddenly found itself with something they haven't had for a long time during the Nazi regime. And now they had the power to speak freely. But they had the beginning of a democracy, and they went berserk with the freedom of printing and saying what they wanted. You have to learn very carefully that power also requires responsibility very strongly. And at that time, they went a little bit haywire in their reactions and a little over-emotional. And also came, of course, that I was the first German who had gone to America, and there was that kind of she left us feeling. And And when I came back, after I hadn't worked in America, that kind of what we call in German a horrible word, Schadenfreude, you know, to be happy about the trouble the other one had.
Yes, yes. Do you think that the strange self-righteousness, though, that came into Germany after the war, from 47, 48 on, has that continued, or has that, how has it changed?
In some ways, of course, it has mellowed. In other ways, it has become even more aggressive. I think one of the great troubles Germany has and doesn't really always realize that this might be one of the roots of a lot of trouble is the fact that Germany has no capital. I mean, Berlin doesn't have the influence anymore a normal capital has on the country. Hamburg can't take the place of Berlin suddenly, and Frankfurt can't, and Munich can't. They're all big cities, but they're not a capital in that sense that the rays of what happens within the capital really beam all over the country, like it happens in New York. It sets a standard, or in London, or in Paris. It sets a standard in the theater, in journalism, in everything, actually. And there, of course, it lacks a bit and makes it very difficult and makes that kind of decentralization, which is very dangerous.
And Bonn becomes almost a pretty little country town.
Oh, yes, Bonn is not a capital in this sense. I mean, it's...
Not a city in the way Berlin
no,
is.
No.
Ich erkenne dich nicht wieder, meine Stadt. Und du nicht mich, wir haben uns verändert, meine Stadt, du und ich, erst unmerklich, dann mehr und mehr, zum Guten und Schlechten, ich erkenne dich nicht wieder. Meine Stadt und du nicht mich, haben wir uns angepasst oder sind wir erwachsen, wären wir stehen geblieben. Wir entdecken uns aufs Neue, meine Stadt, du und ich.
You said in the book that you've made a lot of bad films with good directors and that you don't particularly want to do films. What about if a Mike Nichols or a Bergman came on? Would you still want to do a film with a very good director?
If the script is so that it... that I would think it is a good script and that the part is so that I think I would be right for the film and the film would be right for me. After a while of hesitation, I think I would do it, you know, of course. But still, there would be this hesitation because I've done many, many films with excellent directors and very often I happen to be in the worst films. And sometimes the money ran out, like once on a film I did with Yves Allégret. We had a beautiful script, and it was a good film, until the money ran out, and then it had to be hashed up and all that. Yes, yes. And that happened to me quite often, so I got a little weary.
You also said that you'd only do another play if you can do it entirely yourselves, so that if anything went wrong, you only had yourselves to blame. Is this likely to happen? Do you have any plans?
Well, we started doing that in 65, my husband and I. My husband found an American play called Mrs. Daly, and he reworked it. It had never been produced before, never been shown anywhere, never played in America, nothing. And we did it on a big theater tour through the German-speaking part of Europe, and it was very successful. He directed it, we produced it, I played. And from then on, we thought we should work much more alone and take the responsibility, also the financial risk, and but do it alone. Mm-hmm. After we had been blamed quite often for the things other people had done.
Incidentally, can he find the village of Karfreitag now?
I think he can, yes. He speaks fluent German by now, yeah.
Such das Schöne, halt dich nicht auf bei denen, die verlernten zu sehen, was schön. Such das Schöne, halt dich nicht auf bei jenen, die niemals lernten zu sehen, was schön. Jene, die nie liebten, nie suchten, sagen, such das Schöne, wart nicht darauf, du wirst es nicht finden, wenn du nicht suchst, was schön.
Well, you've had three careers, stage and film actress, singer, and now successful songwriter and author. What are the future plans?
Well, at the moment, I'm working on a lyric book, which my German publisher brings out now in fall in Germany, and I write additional lyrics. It's purely and mainly a book of lyrics, and as I've been writing lyrics for the last 8 years or so, there are about 100 by now, and I still write additional ones and so forth. And then I think I'm going to start another book. In between, I have to do records, which I have to write, and where I write the lyrics, and maybe do 1 hour special television show a year, you know. But I would like to start writing again a book.
Eins und eins, das macht zwei, drum küss und denk nicht dabei, denn Denken schadet der Illusion. Alles dreht sich im Kreis, und kommst du mal aus dem Gleis, war's eben Erfahrung anstatt Offenbarung, was macht das? Und der Mensch an sich ist feige und schämt sich für sein Gefühl, dass es nur keiner zeige, weil die Moral es so will. Doch wenn im Fall des Falles er sich im Dunkeln versteckt, der liebe Gott sieht alles und hat dich längst entdeckt. Eins und eins, das macht zwei, drum küss und lächle dabei, wenn dir auch manchmal zum Heulen ist. Glücklich wer das heute genießt und was vorbei ist, vergisst. Es kommt, wie es kommen muss. Erst kommt der erste Kuss, dann kommt der letzte Kuss, dann der Schluss.
You've been listening to Hildegard Knef.
Ich bin zu hungrig für Hungerdiät. Komm im Theater fast niemals zu spät. Bin auch im Flirt keine Kapazität. Ich glaub, ne Dame werd ich nie. Ich schlaf auf Partys fast immer gleich ein. Kenn alle Biere und nie einen Wein. Hab gegen Playboys ne Antipathie. Ich glaub, ne Dame werd ich nie. Mach, was du willst. Ich bin, wie ich bin. Lebe dahin. Was kommt, das kommt. Denk nicht an morgen und leb irgendwie. Also, ne Dame werd ich nie. Hummern und Austern sind mir ein Graus. Ich ess viel lieber Buletten zu Haus. Hasse Chinchilla und liebe Shishi. Ich glaub, ne Dame werd ich nicht. Gibt's was zu lachen, dann bin ich dabei. Ist mir zum Heulen, na dann bin ich so frei. Mir fehlt zum Lügen die Diplomatie. Also ne Dame werd ich nie. Heute ist heut. Ich leb für den Tag, so wie ich mag. Was kommt, das kommt. Werd nie ein Gretchen, wahrscheinlich kein Van. War keine Lady, werd keine Lady. That's why the lady is a tramp.
Hildegard Knef, or Knief, whatever you want to call her, with a German version of The Lady of the Tramp. And before that, Neville Gray from Radio Nederland doing a feature on that legendary singer. One of my favorite all-time recordings from her is the one we will listen to now, Aber schön war es doch, that was released in 1963. That was a huge hit for this star.
Da ist der Weg, der letzte, den wir gingen. Da ist die Bank, da sagtest du Adieu. Da steht der Baum, an dem die Blüten hingen, die du mir gabst, doch jetzt liegt darauf Schnee. Aber schön war es doch, aber schön war es doch, und ich möchte das noch einmal erleben. Dabei weiß ich genau, dabei weiß ich genau, sowas kann es doch einmal nur geben. Es ging vorbei wie Filme auf der Leinwand. Das Licht geht an und alles ringsumher ist wie ein Buch mit goldbedrucktem Einband. Doch seine Seiten sind so grausam leer. Aber schön war es doch, aber schön war es doch, und ich möchte das noch einmal erleben. Dabei weiß ich genau, dabei weiß ich genau, sowas kann es doch einmal nur geben. Ich kenn die Fragen, die du einmal fragtest. Ich hab die Antwort hier im Herzen drin. Ich hör das Wort, das du mir einmal sagtest. Doch leider hat's für mich nun keinen Sinn. Aber schön war es doch, aber schön war es doch.
ist noch einmal ein Leben. Dabei weiß ich genau, dabei weiß ich genau, sowas kann es doch einmal nur geben. Aber schön war es doch, aber schön war es doch, und für dich steht die Tür immer offen. Doch ich wage es nicht, doch ich wage es nicht, doch ich wage es nicht mehr zu hoffen.
All right, and with that from Hildegard Keefe, we've come to the end of the programme. Well, actually, nearly the end of the programme. There's one piece that I've always wanted to play, and we will end the show with it today. Now, before I tell you what it is, if you want to contact us to, well, get your messages out or whatever, I mean, anything really, tell us your shoe size. I think somebody will. Our email address, of course, is pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. That's pcjqsl@pcjmedia.com. Now, the piece that I was telling you about is by Quincy Jones. It's from one of my favorite Quincy Jones albums of all time. It's the title track from the album Walking in Space, which is just called that, Walking in Space. So until next time, friends, I'm Keith Perron wishing you well, saying so long, au revoir, take care, auf Wiedersehen, adios amigos, and of course, sayonara.